Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Happy Saturday, everybody. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thank you so much for being here. We have huge news from Friday, massively disappointing news. Unfortunately, Jake Bates, your UFL, I think, kicker of the year, kicked 360-yard field goals, will not be a member of the Green Bay Packers. He is going to become a member of the Detroit Lions. So some insult to injury for those who are really wanting or were hoping that Jake Bates was going to be a member of your Green Bay Packers. I say this semi-facetiously because as much as Jake Bates was impressive with 360-yard field goals, has the huge leg, and came up really clutch with some of those field goals, he was 21 of 28 on the year. He was 75% in the UFL. Like, would I have wanted him in Green Bay over, like, let's say, Jack Podlesny at this point? Yeah. Yeah, I think that would have been great. Am I surprised or shocked that he's not a Green Bay Packer? No. Do I think that this is the end of the world? No. So, yeah, it would have been nice to have him. I think it would have been a nice player to add to the training camp battle at the kicker position. Green Bay was clearly interested. They wanted to bring him in for a visit, which is what was reported by Aaron Wilson. I'm a little bit surprised, actually, that he didn't become a Washington Commander. Like, it's only Ramiz Ahmed in Washington right now. Now, he kicked in, you know, Michigan. He's staying in Detroit, and it's in a dome. So certainly some advantages there. But Jake Bates, not a member of the Green Bay Packers. I'm not too upset by it. Again, if he would have been, even if he's like 83%, 85%, I'd be like, all right, this is a real opportunity here. But like, UFL 75% kicker. And I know a lot of those were some heavy, you know, or some deep misses. And I know he ultimately did connect on 360 plus yards. That's all great. But at the end of the day, you're still going to be judged on the kicks that you make or don't make. And he still had a high percentage of misses. So, you know, to me, the better prospect overall at kicker between Jake Bates and Anders Carlson is still Anders Carlson. Now it's just up to Anders to go out and prove it. And now maybe Jake Bates goes and becomes a great kicker in Detroit. That could be the case. If so, then, you know, it's unfortunate that he didn't choose Green Bay. But this is one at the time of signing I'm not super disappointed by. Green Bay will move on. They still have to find their kicker. It's still definitely one of the sorest spots on the team where you're just unsure of how that position is going to perform for, I think, the entirety of the season. I don't think there's anything that Anders can do through the remainder of camp, or any of these kickers can do in camp and preseason, that you're going to go into game one and just feel like, well, kicker is solved. It's good to go. Because, you know, as soon as that 45 yarder goes up and the game is on the line, if that ends up being the case in week one in Brazil, everything is going to be clenched and you are going to be freaking out and you're not probably going to have a great level of confidence. That just is what it is. But still rooting for Anders, not super upset by Jake Bates not becoming a Packer, not thrilled that he's becoming a member of the Detroit Lions, but you move on, you move forward, and I'm sure Green Bay will. And we'll see what they ultimately do at that kicker position. If they do keep three on the roster for training camp, do they move on from one of them and bring somebody new in, or do they just keep it as is? We'll have to wait and see, but Green Bay does need to figure out that position in some capacity. So that was the big news from Friday, as disappointing as it is. But today's topic is not anything really to do with Jake Bates or the kicker position. It is to do with the most underrated players on this Packers roster. Players that I don't think get the credit that they deserve. And this could be a variety of reasons why. Maybe some of these players are ultimately not loved by some Packer fans, and I think they deserve more. Maybe some of these are, but they don't get enough. And there's even a couple unique instances in here as well. But I want to start with one that I've talked a little bit about recently, but I think deserves, and this list is not in any real particular order here, but this is one of the first ones that came to mind for me, and that's Romeo Doubs. And I talked about this a little again the other day of I think some people are just assuming Romeo is going to be the one that fades into the distance a little bit as Jaden Reed and Dontayvion Wicks get better and Christian Watson becomes even more involved in the offense, assuming that he stays healthy. And you've got Musgrave and Kraft and Bo Melton and Malik Heath, and it's going to be Romeo that is the one that will take the back seat. I just don't see it that way. Now, I know some people pointed out, you know, maybe that argument is that Romeo is going to take a step back, not necessarily due to Romeo doing anything wrong, but just inherently because of all the weapons. And yeah, absolutely. Understandably, there are going to be pretty much every wide receiver, tight end, playmaker in this offense is going to have to be unselfish to some extent and take a step back and work towards the betterment of the team and know that in any given moment, in any given game, it could be any of these playmakers. And all of these guys are going to have a level of unselfishness, and all of them are going to probably take some step back because, at least the guys that played last year a ton, because there are so many weapons in this offense. For me personally, just my grades, don't have to take them for what you take them for wherever you want them, right? But Romeo Doubs was my third highest graded player on the Packers last year. My third highest. Now, wide receivers do get a little bit of a boost. They get a little bit more opportunity. I will readily admit that. But still, my third highest graded Packer on the entire roster a season ago was Romeo Doubs. Plus, he had a plus 2.60 grade for me in the playoffs. He had a fantastic playoffs against both Dallas and San Francisco. Like, he was the guy. He was the one that stepped up. He was the one that really helped offensively against Dallas and gave them an opportunity against San Francisco. To me, he has built a rapport with Jordan that everyone else is still working on. And Jordan and Jaden Reed are getting there. I think Wicks will continue to evolve. I think Watson will continue to evolve, as will pretty much all these playmakers as they play more with Jordan. But it does absolutely feel like Romeo Doubs and Jordan Love have the best connection that certainly nowhere near the Rodgers Adams or Rodgers Nelson. Those things were just on a stratosphere in and of their, you know, themselves. But I do believe he has more of that connection with Doubs than any of his other receivers. He has a propensity, not in a bad way, to look his way in some key moments. I think Romeo also brings a little bit of everything to the table. He can be somebody that is a playmaker. He has proven that. He can go over the middle. He can make guys miss. He can be a possession wide receiver. You can feed him in the red zone. He does have a lot of things that he does well within this offense. And then you go to Matt LaFleur this past week talking about him after minicamp and saying how fantastic Romeo has been. And by the way, he said that last offseason as well. This is not the first time that Matt has waxed poetic about how great Romeo has been in an offseason program. This is a big time worker, this is a really good athlete, this is somebody that understands the offense to, I think, a very high extent, and is going to continue to build that rapport with the guy that he already has better rapport with than any other receiver on the roster. So I fully believe that Romeo is going to have a huge role still within this offense. I don't think he is going to be this number four, number five guy and take a backseat to everyone else. And I think he deserves more credit than what he's been given. I know I mentioned the other day, I know there's some statistics out there that some of the efficiency stuff, listen, sometimes Romeo is getting opportunities in tough situations. Again, when Jordan is looking to go to somebody, sometimes in key downs or in last moment situations, sometimes those are going to be a little bit tougher. Do I think Romeo can be better? Absolutely. Absolutely. Is he a finished product? Is he like this complete, clear 1A wide receiver? No, he's not. But he's a really, really good wide receiver that is going to continue to be a big part of this offense. Maybe even not, wouldn't surprise me if he ends up being the number one wide receiver this upcoming season, the quote unquote number one, the guy with the most catches and yards. I could easily see that happening. And again, I've seen a lot of people say that he's going to end up just being the fourth guy or somewhere around there. Don't see it. Do not see it. Think he is in for another big season and would expect Romeo to continue to progress, not regress in year three with him on the team in Matt LaFleur's offense. Number two on my list, Rashid Walker. Rashid Walker is on this list not because I think fans don't necessarily understand how good he is. I don't get the feeling sometimes that the Packers really fully appreciate Rashid Walker. That's just the feel I get. Now, a couple things. Far be it from me to overrule what the Packers think about a player, right? Like they probably know. It's not to say they're infallible or they can't get things wrong. They have in the past, they will in the future, but they know that he needs to continue to improve, which I do not disagree with in any way at all, period. But I really, really liked what I saw from Rashid Walker, especially in the second half of last season. Now, I had a negative 2.3 grade on him for the season, but from week 11 on, a plus 2.05 grade, which means before week 11, I had a negative 4.35 grade on Rashid Walker. So that ramp up from weeks 1 to 10 was a struggle for Rashid, at least once he got in for Bakhtiari. But then starting week 11, which is really when this offense as a whole started to settle down, Rashid took a massive step, in my opinion, and looked like a legitimate, really good starting left tackle in the NFL. And what does Green Bay do to repay it? They go and draft a potential starter at left tackle in Jordan Morgan. But I believe that this is a starter. I believe he is very clearly one of their best five. In fact, I would put him as the third best offensive lineman on this roster. I would go Zach Tom and Elton Jenkins 1-2 in some order. And then I would go Rashid 3 ahead of Josh Myers, ahead of Andre Dillard, ahead of Jordan Morgan, ahead of Sean Ryan, ahead of all those guys. I would put him as the third best offensive lineman. And like I said, it seems like Green Bay, every time they talk about him, just only wants to talk about how he still needs to improve, which sure. Yes. Good. Great. They go out and draft a potential replacement for him. Not replacement, but like starter where now does Rashid need to move? Is he going to be the swing tackle? All these things very interesting to me. Like I said, I love Rashid. I think he's off to a great start to his career. Seventh round pick. I still go back to that initial offseason when he was drafted in the seventh round. Really liked him coming out and thought Green Bay got a steal in the seventh. And then he was hurt through all of training camp. And then he comes back the week before the final preseason game, really probably needing to save his job. And you might think, they weren't going to cut him. Remember, this is not dissimilar to Lou Nichols. If Rashid's injured for another week that year, they probably release him with an injury settlement, which means he can't re-sign with Green Bay right away. That you have to wait a period of time after you release somebody injured. And usually somebody else picks up that player, just like what happened with Lou Nichols. I think it happened with Tyler Goodson as well, where another team picks him up before you have the ability to, because you have to wait a greater period of time. So it's not impossible that if Rashid's not healthy for that final week of preseason, that they release him injured and then he gets that injury settlement and then some team picks him up before Green Bay can and he's just gone. But instead, he gets healthy that week before, plays in that preseason game. I remember because it was the first time I got all 22, I think, for a preseason game, at least one of them. And I go and I watch, and one of the players I was most excited about was Rashid Walker because he played a ton in the game and he was freaking awesome. He was awesome. Not only did he save his job, he like very clearly won a 53 spot on that day. Like it was really great play. And then of course he comes back this past year, gets the opportunity. Like he got time in camp as a starter, won the job after David Bakhtiari went out injured. And like I said, there were some bumps in the road through those first 9 weeks-ish. And then after that, he was really, really good. And like I said, I think for the most part, fans are appreciative of Rashid. And I think they kind of have a pulse on it, but it's been more of an interesting, from the Packers standpoint of always talking about how Rashid's not there and he needs to take a next step and he's got a long ways to go. And I'm just like, he played pretty freaking well for a guy that's a long ways to go. But that's where I'm at with Rashid. I think he's still underrated in some capacity. And like I said, maybe most by the Green Bay Packers. Hey everybody, we are officially in the thick of the NBA and NHL finals, and over the course of the next couple weeks, we will crown new champions in both leagues. We're also in the midst of baseball season. The WNBA is seriously heating up with crazy new stories every single day. And don't forget about esports either. Whatever your interest is, make it more interesting with Prize Picks. There's always action on Prize Picks, and right now, every Wednesday and Saturday in June, if your esports lineup doesn't win, you'll get your entry fee back. Choose from Counter-Strike 2, Call of Duty, League of Legends, and so many more. And of course, There are still plenty of incredible selections available during the NHL and NBA finals, and right now, Prize Picks is lowering select player stat projections on Tuesdays, which increases your chances of getting a win. There are a ton of unique promotions available that you will not want to miss out on. This week, I'm expecting a massive performance from two of the biggest stars in the world, Connor McDavid and Luka Doncic. Both need huge performances to give their respective teams a chance to win a championship, so I'm going heavy with those two. I'm also going with Sabrina Ionescu in the WNBA. There's never been a better time to get in the action with Prize Picks, and we're making it easy for you here at Packaday. Just download the Prize Picks app today and use code Packaday for a first deposit match up to $100. That's the Prize Picks app using code Packaday for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Hello, friends. As many of you know, a few years back, the Milwaukee Bucks were in the NBA Finals, and I desperately wanted to go to Game 6 in Milwaukee to see them win the championship. As you can imagine, prices were insane, and I kept going back and forth with different apps to try and find the cheapest tickets possible. I finally found them, clicked purchase, and of course, they were gone. Goodbye, Game 6 of the NBA Finals. Now, thankfully, the day of the game, I was able to find a ticket, but the entire thing was so expensive and way too stressful. I really wish I could have simply used Game Time to alleviate all of the stress and all of the hassle. I've started using Game Time app for purchasing all of my tickets, and I wish I would have done so sooner. From low prices to easy-to-find tickets to last-minute ticket deals, the Game Time app is perfect for all of my ticket needs. Game Time is the fastest-growing ticketing app in the country for a reason. You can get images of your seat before you buy. You can buy tickets in a matter of seconds, two clicks only, in fact, and tickets are sent directly to your phone so you never need to dig through your email. The Game Time guarantee means you'll always get the best price. If you find tickets in the same section and row for less, Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. Snag the tickets without the stress with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. That's code PACKADAY. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed. Number three. This is a player that I don't think anyone is sleeping on. I don't think anyone is saying that he's bad. I think everyone's extremely excited about this player. That's Tucker Kraft. Plus 4.35 grade for me a season ago. Plus 4.35 is a rookie tight end. And most of that was week 11 on, plus 4.55 grade from week 11 on, negative 0.2 before that. Like, he took a massive turn midway through the season. I know everyone kind of knows already that he went from somebody who I wouldn't say necessarily struggled in, like, I would kind of, like, you would just tell he was so fresh and so new to so much stuff that he was being given in OTAs and mini camps and early in training camp. And then to take all of that and to become the player that he did by midway through last season was so unbelievably impressive to me. But the reason I think he's underrated is because I think when everyone looks at the tight end pecking order, they view Luke Musgrave 1, Tucker Kraft 2, and then after that, the other tight ends. I don't view it that way. I think Tucker Kraft's the best tight end on this team. I do. I really, really do. Now, it is close. It is extremely close. I love Luke Musgrave. And I love that two tight end set. They're both going to get a ton of playing time. They're probably both going to be like quote unquote starters. It doesn't really matter. The beautiful thing is Green Bay has both. We don't have to really argue about it. They have both and they're both really good. But I think the default for people is Musgrave 1, Kraft 2. I would switch it. I would honestly switch it. And the reason being is I think Kraft is a better blocker. I think he's better after the catch. And while I think Musgrave is a little bit more dynamic in getting open, Kraft was pretty adept at it as well. So I just think Kraft is the better overall tight end. And while Musgrave does certain things better than Tucker Kraft, specifically get up the seam, bring defenders with him, and you know, just obviously his size and I think a little bit more just pure speed to get down the field, I like Kraft a little bit more in how he does everything. So it's not, again, that anyone doesn't like Tucker Kraft or doesn't think he's... I'm just saying... I'm even higher on Tucker Kraft. I think he is tight end one on this team. And again, we can splice it any way we want. They're very, very close. They're all going to play, or they're both going to play. But I like him a little bit more than Musgrave, and that's why I think he's slightly underrated. Next up, we're going to stick right with the tight end position. That's Ben Sims. Plus 1.20 grade a season ago. I cannot stress to you, and even going back to that Tucker Kraft 4.35 grade as well, the tight end position is extremely hard for players to grade really well, because the blocking aspect of it in and of itself leads to a pretty big grouping of negative plays. Like, you are, you know, a tight end that's having to block defensive ends and linebacker and like super athletic people. And you're also, you know, tasked with receiving the ball, running after the catch. Some of the route running can sometimes not be as great. Like, it is a really tough position to play and grade really well at. It is insanely hard as a rookie to do well. And the fact that Musgrave and Kraft and Ben Sims all graded in the positive, but just speaking on Ben Sims here, this is a undrafted free agent that Minnesota picks up, waives at the roster deadline. Green Bay picks up off of waivers, an undrafted free agent. They pick up off of waivers, put on their 53, start playing him week one. And I think people think sometimes that Ben Sims was just this blocking tight end. He wasn't. Like, he profiled as somebody who could potentially be a little bit more of a blocker. He showed solid blocking in college at times, but like, this was still a more well-rounded and I would even argue a little bit more receiving style tight end in college. So Green Bay brought him in and kind of really focused on his blocking a little bit more and kind of making him that blocking tight end. Now, we're not talking Mercedes Lewis-esque here, but they sort of transitioned him to that. And he did, number one, a really nice job with it. But number two, I don't think people quite understand yet that Ben Sims has a lot more to give as a tight end receiving the ball than he has had the opportunity to really show so far. So there is more to Ben Sims than has met the eye so far, and I expect him to continue to get better. I am overjoyed that he is Green Bay's number three, and I think in a lot of teams and a lot of offenses, he would be a real legitimate option as a number two tight end. That was a steal for Green Bay. And again, a plus 1.20 as an undrafted free agent rookie tight end picked up off of waivers at the deadline, like just, or at the cut down time. Unbelievable move by Goody and friends, and a heck of a find in Ben Sims. Next up, player that I have talked about a lot, that I am excited about, that I am buying stock in, that's Devontae Wyatt. Now, I think for the most part, people have him graded pretty well, but I am a pretty firm believer that, number one, he was not placed in a system that was conducive to his skill set with Joe Barry. And I think he is very much being placed in a, you know, system and a style of defense that is conducive to his skill set. I think we are about to see a big jump from Devontae Wyatt. But the other thing I want to touch on here, now I had a negative 0.6 grade. Let's just say I had basically a neutral grade on him, which I think is probably what people would say is like, he's been fine, right? I don't think most people are saying he's terrible or anything like that, but I do hear sometimes here and there, like the bust word for Devontae Wyatt. And listen, we don't need to make any mistake about it here. He has not lived up to the first round expectations. As a first round pick, I wouldn't say bust, but it's definitely not been what Green Bay was expecting when they drafted him in that spot. He's going to have the opportunity to show it this year with a system that is more set for his style of play and for his skill set. I'm buying it. I thought the pressures, he was a top 20 guy in pressures at the defensive tackle position last year in a defense that was not set for him. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Now, again, top 20 defensive tackle for pressures. He needs to be better against the run. He needs to finish those plays. He had a lot of pressures that did not amount in sacks because he didn't finish the play. He needs to do a better job of finishing. Even in a system that is more set up for him, he's going to have to be the one that finds the way to finish those big plays. And if he doesn't, you're going to end up with some level of disappointment still and not living up to expectations. But I believe he is set up for success this year. I'm excited to see it. And I still think he is, even without the system change, he's been a little bit underrated for what he's been able to bring to the table so far. Next up, I don't have to go into this in a ton of detail, but I do think Daniel Whalen is a little bit underrated. They found their punter. He's a really good punter. He's been fantastic so far in OTAs and mini camps. Like, lock this guy up. Green Bay's been, I don't want to say necessarily cursed at punter, but it's not been something where they've had much success in finding it. They found their guy. He's really good. Don't let him go. And it's, I hope that people recognize that he is a really good punter, and it's not always going to look the best because he is punting in Green Bay, cold weather. He's got to go to Chicago for a game. Like, that's just a disadvantage that some of these dome punters and warm weather punters don't have. But he's really good, and I'm very, very pleased that he is the Packers punter with no competition on the roster. All right, four more here. The next three are a lot more special teams related, or at least two of the three for sure. Corey Ballantyne, negative 1.7 grade. He was, you know, still below average, but here's the thing. You need somebody in the back end of that corner room who can be a core special teamer and can come in and play in a pinch, and you don't have to worry about it. Like, it's not going to be like this, oh my goodness, how are we going to survive with this guy at corner? Like, for Jarrett Bush, right? If you remember Jarrett Bush, I know you do, he was a really great special teams player. His break in case of emergency corner skills left a little to be desired. Now, one of my favorite plays of all time still, the Jarrett Bush interception in the Super Bowl. Love that play. He has to come in for Charles Woodson, a player who was very much panned for his defensive abilities on the field, comes up with one of the biggest interceptions in Packers history, period. Like, that's how big that play was. So it was still one of my favorite plays to this day. But overall, his coverage skills as a breaking case of emergency corner were not great. With Corey Ballantyne, you get a pretty good corner that you can come in and help in those situations. Now he's getting cross-trained in the slot. He can play outside. He can play inside. He can be a core special teamer. I think, honestly, even if you needed him in a pinch, I think you would probably play him a little bit at safety as well. Really like what he showed a season ago during that middle stretch where they had the wins against Detroit and the Chargers and the Chiefs all in the 3-week period of time. Ballantyne was huge during that and deserves a lot of credit for the way that he played during that time. He's a perfect number five or number six corner and fits very, very well with this team. Next is Keyshawn Nixon. Here's the thing. I think, again, people very clearly understand how great he is as a returner. Two-time first-team All-Pro. In fact, if we were doing an overrated segment, I might actually say, based on last year, that he might be a little overrated as a returner. But when people look at his contract, I know people are like, that was an overpay. Green Bay shouldn't have done it. I just disagree. And I'm not a huge Nixon at corner guy. I had a negative 2.45 grade on him at corner, and I think it's something that I wish Green Bay maybe would have tried a little bit harder to maybe upgrade. Maybe they did with Javon Bullard or, you know, maybe Kalen King or who knows, right, what happens at that spot. But negative 2.45 grade, but a plus 0.2 grade from week 13 on and a plus 1.45 grade at corner in the final 4 weeks of the season. Furthermore, he gives you all the ability on special teams, specifically as a kick returner, can help as a punt returner as well. And then just the leadership traits. So I talked about it earlier this week where he got the day off. He got a mini camp off and he's still showing up and coaching the other corners and helping out and you know, being a part of the team, even on his day off. You need guys like that on the roster. You really, really do. He's one of those dudes. It was a good free agent to bring back. Maybe a little bit of an overpay, but if you split it between the kick returner and the corner, you get that value very, very quickly. Not to mention you can place him on offense, on kick coverage if you need it, punt coverage if you need it. He can do a lot of different things, and I still think that he's maybe a little bit underrated despite being able to do all those things. Two left. The next one people aren't going to like. Tyler Davis. I think this is the thing. Like, people hate Tyler Davis at times. Like, just can't say. This is the number one most used special teams player 2 years ago, and he did it at a pretty high level, like a good level. He played well on teams. And he is somebody that is considered a core member of this overall special teams. And here's the other thing. Before he went out with the injury last year with the ACL, he was somebody that was standing out in training camp to me. I really liked the way that he was playing. He's got some, or he had some juice after the catch. He's got good hands. He made a series of bad plays in like some preseason stuff. And I think people kind of turned on him. I'm still hopeful on Tyler Davis. Now, I don't know what he's going to look like post-injury. He didn't practice all in OTAs or mini camps. Hopefully he's back and ready to go for day one of training camp. He's no lock to make this team. He's a good football player. And in like, I'm not talking like he should be a number two tight end. I'm not even necessarily saying he should be a number three tight end. But if he gets on the roster as a fourth tight end behind those three second-year tight ends, all for it, core special teamer, good tight end that you can use in little snippets here and there. And if you do have some injuries at tight end, he can step up and help you out. I really believe that. So he's number nine on my list. And then number 10, last but not least, is not a player at all. It's Matt LaFleur. And I do believe that Matt's starting to get his flowers a little bit more and the respect that I think he earns and deserves. But you're talking about a coach here that won three straight 13-win seasons, went 8-9 in Aaron's last year, which was a disappointing year. But there were some weird circumstances to that season. You had the international game, the Rodgers stuff just still feels weird in hindsight. And they went through the a massive losing streak. They never gave up. They had the opportunity to get in the playoffs in the last game. They just couldn't get there. But I thought the job did that, you know, the job Matt did at righting the ship and getting the team, you know, ready to go and to bounce back and have a shot at the playoffs in that final week was impressive. Now, Matt needs to do better in the playoffs. There's no question about it. He's got to find a way to win the big one. He's had some opportunities. There's been some missed call, or like, you know, the not going for the 2-point conversion against Tampa. Just some things like that probably need a little bit of cleaning up, but he's a fantastic, I really believe he's a fantastic coach. I love the pulse that he has on the team. I love the way that he manages it. He's got a huge passion for the game, a huge passion for his players. He has the ability and he will get after players in a significant way when he needs to, but he's also kind of a player's coach. Like, you have to be able to straddle that line of being a player's coach, but also being a hard ass when you need to be a hard ass. And he's got that down really well. It's a really hard thing to do. I'm always, always impressed with him. And I still, even though he's starting to get a little bit more of the attention and the respect and the reverence, I still don't think it's what it deserves to be. And that will come if he can win that Super Bowl. That would be huge for him. But he's a great coach, and I think Green Bay's in great hands with him in that spot. All right, my 10 most underrated Packers: Romeo Doubs, Rashid Walker, Tucker Kraft, Ben Sims, Devontae Wyatt, Daniel Whalen, Corey Ballantyne, Keyshawn Nixon, Tyler Davis, and Matt LaFleur. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. Be right back here tomorrow with an all-new episode. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Shea Bardad, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donna Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Bremen, Dan Miller, Alex Huang, Arnaldo Espinoza, Dan Guestford. Thank you so much. I'll see you tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.